Our next speaker is Friedhelm Dorsch. Freddie has spent a lifetime chasing eclipses and astronomical phenomena around the world, even before it became popular to many of us. And he's going to single out of his many experiences three particular eclipses to share his observations of. Three exciting black moons. Freddie?
Thank you very much for this invitation. When you first quoted the number of eclipses I have seen, you were wrong. You said more than 50, the number was 49. But like a self-fulfilling prediction, you should become right. Now it's 51. Well, let me first return to the beginnings of my eclipse information. My very first solar eclipse I experienced to see was in the age of 6 years. That was the eclipse of 30 June 1954, which was total in Minneapolis, the USA, and the Great Lakes, and southern Greenland, southern Iceland, and Scandinavia, Lithuania, Poland, Russia, the Caucasus Mountains, and then disappeared in the Indian subcontinent. And I was living then in the small village of Garenfeld, which is about 20 kilometers from my present home in Witten. And the maximum amount, magnitude of the eclipse was a little bit less than 82%, and this meant more than three quarters of the sun's surface was obliterated by the moon, and this had a visible effect on the brightness of the sky. At that time it was usual that I had to go to bed during the noontime for a few hours, but on that day my mother made an exception. I had to view the eclipse. And my father had prepared smoked glass, and I looked through the glass and called and shouted, "That is the moon." And my father corrected me, "No, that is the remaining part of the sun." I am sure I did not capture it with my mind, and so it remained the moon, Buster. What was very impressive for me was the behavior of some animals. Sparrows and starlings were flying around very excited, and the whole landscape seemed to be coated with a thin layer of concrete powder. This lasted not very long. The sky became brighter and brighter, and then I had to return to bed. Maybe that this event has had an impact which my parents did not foresee, but that's the only explanation which I have. Now let's proceed to the eclipses I want to describe here, and that are namely the first total eclipse I have seen in 1970, 7th March. And the first time I have read about it was in the yearbook of the Swiss Astronomical Society, the Sternhimmel or Starry Sky translation. And there was an advertisement of a group expedition to the small town of Perry in Florida, which was on the center line there. And also the German Union of Amateurs, the VDS, Vereinigung der Sternfreunde, also advertised the same location. And that was interesting for me because I had become a student at the university and was an auxiliary assistant and earned some money, 400 German marks per month. And I calculated that until the eclipse I could have saved enough money to do this expedition. But I was not happy about the fact that these two societies chose the same location. I wanted to have more options, and so I saw Norfolk in Virginia would be located suitable, and also Mexico, and at last NASA shows in Mexico, and I was in Miami. I heard the NASA predictions for the weather. Again, I went to Mexico. Also, I was captured by the very melodic sound of the locations in Mexico, say Nihuatlán, Michoacán, Teotihuacán, and so on. And so there was no doubt I would go to Mexico. And the decision was right, though Norfolk and Virginia also experienced clear skies. But the decision had been made. The flight from Miami to Mérida in the Yucatan Peninsula was very memorable because I experienced my so far only 2 seconds of zero gravity when the plane was captured by a downstream air current, which lasted, to my feeling, 2 seconds. But these 2 seconds, of course, ended sometimes. And then some luggage came from above. And when I looked around, I only saw the pale faces. Very probably including myself. I could not imagine that the plane would be attacked. To my imagination, the wings should have broken off. But they didn't, otherwise I would not be here. Having landed, the inspection for the wings lasted about 20 minutes, so it was taken seriously. It was a very intense shock. When at Mexico City, on the 5th of March, I calculated that it would last too long to take the train to Oaxaca, the capital of the same federal state. And so I tried to get a plane. At that time, it was possible to book open dates, which is not thinkable today. And I got one of the 3 last places available of 3 planes, which on the next morning started to Oaxaca. And when arrived at Oaxaca, I took a taxi, which drove me 90 kilometers to the south. The weather was cirrus-like, with only small patches of clear blue. And after 90 kilometers, I stopped there, and fortuitously I met 4 sons of German immigrants, one of which spoke perfect German. He was a policeman, and he told me that he had shot down 3 people who wanted to rob him. So it was some matter of doubt if I should feel sure in his vicinity or not. Well, the next day became brilliant weather, though the night was very cloudy at first. The NASA had to camp about 0.5 kilometer from my site, which I chose. And I anxiously asked them what would be the weather prospects. And they said, wait a few hours and the clouds will have vanished. And so they did. I had 4 cameras with me. It was the maximum being allowed when asking the Mexican embassy. And I had only modest optics. One wide-angle lens of 20 millimeters, which gave a diagonal of 93 degrees. And then one telephoto lens of 105 millimeters, old Tessa lens with an auxiliary tube, which was necessary to adjust it to my camera. Then one long focus length, 295 millimeters. While this curious focal length, it was an objective of a binocular with 80 millimeters aperture. And I asked the factory, the manufacturer, what is a rear focal length, and he told me this value. I had made some practice with this lens and found that the field curvature was so strong that I could meets the central part of the field, except I would shut down the aperture to 50 millimeters.
You know that field
aperture cannot be influenced by shutting down the instrument, but the effect can be softened. And I would content it with this effect at 50 millimeters aperture. I used different films. The fastest film at that time was the Ansgar Chrome 500, the 500 SFM. And I purchased two pieces of it in Paris in August 1969. The expiry date of the film was December 69, so it was a quarter behind the expiry date. And you can suppose that the speed was no longer higher than the ESA, by less. Then an Ektachrom 23, and it was 160 ESA. Then a black and white film, it was a Milford HB4 with 400 ESA. And then a large size camera with 6 centimeters by 9 centimeters, a roll film camera with an Agfa CD18, that means 50 ASA of sensitivity. Now let's see the first pictures, which I have made. Exposure because I was only facing to this picture here. The new moon is too small, and this 2 second exposure time at f2.56 with the ektachrome only showed Venus here, and Mercury should be seen here. This is a small image of Mercury. Mercury remained visible until 6 minutes after totality. It had a magnitude of -0.5. Venus at -3.9, and Venus was invisible without the eclipse. You see the horizon is elevated very much, about 20 degrees in the south, but it was not dangerous for my photographs here. The next picture is with the Ansgar 500, it's nearly 300 millimeters of length, and this is a typical shape of the corona. And you see some wonderful rays here, and here's an overexposure in respect to the prominence, which was here, which also was created this way here. And you see that the surface of the moon is a little bit modeling, because I wanted to photograph the shine of this lens. And the next picture is a copy which is longer exposed, and here you see some features but not very pronounced. But you also can see here a small star, that is Phi Aquarii of 4.4 magnitude. It also appeared in the, on the picture before. And it is of course better to have a longer exposure time, and the longest I used was 2 seconds, but the next one is only 1 second. No, maybe the 2 seconds, but it is. Also, Phi Aquarii should appear here somewhere at the edge of the corona. And now you can see some of the Maria, here Marumbium, and here now Tranquillitatis, and the Imbium is a little bit overexposed by the scattering light of the prominence here. But the gross features of the lunar surface are visible here. Now one of the black and white photographs. You see a lot of stars which are only dust. and I think I've had one business mess. Yes, I had little experience of development of films, but the source here of this ornament of dust was that the water in which I bathed the film was oily. And this oily surface had some dust, and this oily film settled on the film of my photographic film, and so it was impossible to remove this dust from the picture. The exposure time was 1/8 of a second. The speed was 400 meters at 5.6 was the stuff. And very many years later, I regretted that I had not made any exposures showing the prominences. And then I had the idea that perhaps the prominences would be in this picture. I should only to expose the paper or the copy of the original a little bit longer, and then it might be possible to see them. And it's not very pronounced here, but one prominence should be here at this edge. And two others, I think, to the right, but I cannot remember very well because it was impossible to see in the internet old photographs of the 70 clips, which showed the position of the prominences which were around the lunar limb. So I can only suppose that there were some more small prominences, but one large at least here. That is the result of the overexposure of the paper or the copy film. Well, the next picture shows the landscape in the northeast where the shadow was disappearing. And I once more took my right angle lens, which showed the first picture. And I took my light meter, hold it in the direction of the shadow, and was very stirred by the fact that the needle was climbing. I could not explain that. And then I looked into the landscape and see, yes, the natural dimmer had been switched on. I had mistaken the reading of my stopwatch by 1 full minute. And so totality had ended. And this exposure was a 1/30 of a second. But clearly a few seconds after the project. So this is a lunar shadow in the eastern direction. The most distance you can see here is the clouds here, which are about 200 kilometers away from my vantage point here. That was the last picture of this photo. Let's return. Now, the next eclipse was that of 1984. Many of you from America will remember this eclipse, which was nearly total. I went to Morocco, and the interesting facts of this eclipse had been that the circumstances were very criminal to get there, and that I was astonished by the results of my photographic attempts. Only 4 pictures you see here. I begin with the first one here. This is an image which shows the solar corona silhouetting the limb of the moon. And first, perhaps some acknowledgements to the expedition to there. I had with me several cameras, 3 cameras. My very first telescope was a passport telescope. It's a lens of 50 millimeters, shut down to 30 millimeters, but of a cruel chromatic aberration.
would have an F-stop of H2-33. That means it must be shut, but only if the filter is applied, which removes the secondary spectrum. Otherwise, it remains sharp only in one color. So the white image would remain in shot and would work like an image software. But I wanted to apply the color filter, the infrared filter, only, but just removing the secondary spectrum and giving a very good and sharp image. Then I had a telescope length of 800 millimeters for making pictures in color with different exposure times, and then one large size camera, the size of an aerial camera. The transparency in size of 8 by 10 inches, and the focal length was 480 millimeters, or around 500 millimeters. And I had not provided a filter for it. So you might wonder what can one do with a camera which has nearly 500 millimeters, such a large image size, and no filter, but an aerial lens. Very few of you know that solar eclipses are not my first interest in astronomy, other than observing and photographing stars in the proximity of the sun. And the date of the eclipse is a hint to it. 30th May is the date when Aldebaran is in conjunction with the sun. And I hoped to make an exposure which shows Aldebaran in the sky and the eclipsed sun besides the part of it. And the long focal length was necessary to distinguish the image of the ordinary uneclipsed sun, because I wanted to see that the center of the sun was darker than the rim of the sun, indicating that it was an eclipse of God, not an ordinary solar eclipse. When I changed the plane in Paris to go to Casablanca, there must have happened some relief because of the delay of the flight. When I was in Casablanca, the suitcase with the large camera did not appear. And with this suitcase, the filters for my telescope, the passport telescope, were also unavailable. And so I had only to rely on this kind of photography. The only telescope was the passport telescope of 1 meter focal, more precisely 98 centimeters. And now the problem was how to focus the sun. I had no filter to protect my eyes. And what could I do else? The buildings which I could use for focusing were too close. There were nothing in the landscape at the first glance which could be which could serve as a measure for infinity. But my location at the ocean was the rescue. I detected that the distant waves were glittering in the sunlight. And these waves of light were distant enough to call it infinity. And so I could focus my instruments without any danger. And the statistic character of this glittering of the waves makes it even easier than a steady source of light to get a good focusing. And when I expected an irregularity, a small cloud approached to the sun. And I hope to see the cloud appear about a few seconds before set contact. And informally, I looked to the telescope, and it was 1 minute before an irregularity, and I was shocked by what I saw. I saw just this year. And this picture here is the long exposed copy of the original, because the original would not then be labeled here because of darkness. I had a film of 200 ESA, but at F2.33 it is too less, even at 1,000 seconds. And I had no idea how long I should make the exposure time, so it shows this 1,000 seconds. But you can see here one point, that's a very long one here, which is protruding about 200,000 kilometers from the solar limb. And you might remember the wonderful picture of Dennis Tichico, who made this dissected exposure. One part is filtered, one part without filter. It shows this prominence very prominently. Yes. Let's proceed to the next picture. Here I had the same exposure time, 1,000 seconds. And you see the soft image effect that the prominent is there. The chromosphere is very short, and you see only shorter parts of the chromosphere, and it is dramatic by the approaching cloud. I did miss angularity because the cloud obliterated completely the sun, so I didn't see anything of it, but the main theme of investigation was the visibility of the chromosphere and the additional visibility of the corona, which I did not expect was Berner's for me. The next picture. This is a typical attempt to capture something which had been gone. I was very angry that about 34 seconds of energy were over, but I felt the camera here the exposure time as 30 seconds. And the image shows very much more than I could see through the viewfinder. But it is clear that linearity is over here. And, well, final proof. That's good. Then one of the last pictures here shows now
the chromosphere.
Yeah. That was early enough before it disappeared. Well, and now the next eclipse. That was a partial eclipse in Germany. Yes. This is a black and white photograph, and the day was absolutely rainy from the beginning to nearly the end. There was no hope to see anything. I had formally planned to visit this in Alaska or Canada, but I wanted to prefer the African eclipse one year later, and I said no my research. So I had to be contented with the past eclipse in Germany, the University of Münster in Germany. And 5 minutes before the beginning of the eclipse, the clouds departed. The first contact took place just behind the cloud ribbon, which you see here. So Mr. Murphy was present and prohibited to see the beginning. But afterwards, and you see this in the next pictures, there are the small indentation, the upper right part of the sun is visible. This is nearly setting sun, shortly before another cloud bank was beginning to obliterate the sun. The next picture, here you see a small rest at the right. And I also made some color pictures, and I had the idea because of lateness of the sun, because the differential reflection was so obvious. How could I stress this effect? The normal way would be to make a normal exposure and compare it with a circular sun.
which can be captured in the highest time. And then I had to another idea. I made a double exposure with the same camera, and how I did it, you see in the last picture. I turned the camera by, say, 90 degrees, and so the blackness of the sun becomes more evident because the orientation of the north axis are perpendicular to each other. Not very intriguing, this picture, because the horizon is imaged twice here. And I could say good luck that the two solar images were not matching each other. Yes. So there are one besides the other one, and can now be compared in respect to each other. This was the final result of the, say, 25 minutes eclipse which were visible after a rainy day, and so I have a feeling of victory in Grand Village. So this was a small cross-section of my eclipses. I hope that you have enjoyed some of the pictures, and if there are some questions, we have only a small time, but please put the questions if you like. Thank you for your attention.
Some questions
about the techniques,
or if you can do the questions during the break, because we've got a short break, is that all right?
Yes.
Due to the facilities, we have to be back at 6 o'clock and do the last three, not least, three sessions. So I'll see you back here at 6 o'clock.